Passage, la nouvelle série de podcasts de l'Institut français. Un échange libre et sans modérateur entre une personnalité des mondes francophones et une personnalité néerlandaise sur des thèmes qui leur sont chers.
Nice to meet you, Anthony. I'm really excited to have you sitting in front of me with your book in front of me as well. So it's really a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure for me too. It's a bit, it's kind of fourth dimension for me because when I started writing a book, I couldn't imagine I will be here in Amsterdam to talk with you about this question. And I just realized the responsibility of the writers, because I thought to be a writer was just have no responsibility. Just it was just writing what you want in your room. And now I realize that I'm in front of you because I wrote a book. But it's a bit strange for me.
No, and I'm excited because we were talking about that, your book, De Slapende Kinderen in Dutch. It came out in the spring of this year, and I read a review about it. I myself am a person living with HIV since 2007. I'm working with AIDSfonds, which is a Dutch NGO in the field of HIV/AIDS, health, and human rights. And every time a new book comes out around HIV, which is not that often, I'm always triggered to read it. And I was so touched by it for different reasons, which I hope we can talk about. But I never had imagined that I would be sitting in front of you 6 months later. So when we got the request that you were here and that we might do this conversation, I was very excited to do so.
Yeah, that what you say made me think that I grew up in a family where no one can pronounce the word AIDS. In this family, three people died of AIDS, but nobody can talk of AIDS. And I grew up watching the TV, watching the activists in France, like ACT UP, doing a lot of acting, doing a lot of things to make the things change. And I always asked myself, why some people are about to talk about AIDS, and why my family is still not able to. And it's kind of the point of departure for my work of writer.
I was interested in like, I hope we can talk about your family, because the book plays in the village where you're from in the 1980s. And I was really touched also by the setup of your book, because you switch between telling your family's story and at the same time you also tell about the sort of the scientific struggle and fight to find what this virus is that's killing people, how you can find a cure. Of course, HIV came up in the early 1980s, and it took till 1996 before there was treatment. So there was almost 16 years of nothing there, with people acquiring HIV, getting sick and dying. And I was wondering, why did you choose that setup? Because I can really imagine why you want to tell the story of your family, but that you also chose to tell this scientific course at the same time, looking at your family, what they went through in those years, and at the same time telling the scientific, sort of quest for a cure or for treatment.
Yeah, it's like a Smith song. I'm just a country boy, and I often thought a country stories couldn't make a novel, because I'm living in a society with a lot of urban representation. And when I ask myself why my family isn't able to talk about AIDS, I thought it was a bit because they never see themselves in a book. They never see themselves on the television. And it's not a social problem. I'm from the middle class. I don't came from a poor family. I came from a country family, and I realized that there was still a book to write. Because AIDS is a subject who has been treated a lot in the literary and cinema, in the TV shows. But each time I read a book, I watched a movie, I say, my family is not here. Because in France, because of the success of authors like Hervé Guibert, the homosexual and urban dimension took a big place. And it was important because at the end of the 80s, at the beginning of the 90s, we needed a writer to talk, to explain his own experience of HIV. And the success was so big that it became everything. It became a kind of alpha and omega of the question. And what I wanted to do is just had a little book in a library, a little book to say there is another dimension. It's kind of... I wanted to show my family they are part of a bigger story, because I thought that the pain of my grandmother, the silence of my father came, so they didn't realize they were part of a worldwide story.
No, I'm thinking so many things at the same time. I think one of the things that you trigger me with is there has been a lot of books like the plays around HIV and the band Played On is a great novel. It's about Angels in America. It's a great play. And one of the books that came out, I think, 4 or 5 years ago is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. I don't know if you had an opportunity to read it. And I had an opportunity to interview her as well a couple of years ago. And she said that one of the questions she got on her tour was, do we need another book about HIV? Because so much has been written. And her reply was, well, if you look at, for example, World War II and the great suffering and the tens of thousands of books that have been written, rightly so, on that war. If you then look at HIV and AIDS, where now 40 million people have died, and if you look at the hundreds of books that have been written, that's just a start. And she said there's so many stories to be told about these 40 million people. And you trigger me in the sense that was what really touched me on your book, because I think mentioning the books and the plays, I think they're so valuable and they're there and they're part of our legacy as an HIV movement. But I think your book touches on two stories that really haven't been told that much, or at least I haven't encountered. And that's from the perspective of people using drugs and from the perspective of a young child. And starting reading the book, I had to say, because I knew I read a review and the back cover, I thought it was really about your uncle and the drug use and how he acquired HIV. But then the second half of your book, or at least the last part of your book, is about your niece that was born out of your uncle and your aunt was born with HIV. And that was actually the first time that I encountered that story in a novel. So I'm really grateful that you wrote it. And I think it's not just a little book that needs to be in the library. I think it's a really big story that you tell, and it needs to be told.
Yeah, thank you. The question of my cousin, of my uncle's daughter, has been a big question, because at the beginning, I just wanted to write the book of my uncle. And then I realized I wanted to write a story in a dark angle. So in the country with... The drug dimension of the pandemic, and then I thought you can't stop with your uncle, because he had a child, and there is no child in the artistic production about AIDS. Never ever. I never saw it. I just saw it in France, maybe once in France on a TV movie. But it was a kind of adolescent, not a child. It's a really touchy question. And I thought it was time to cross the river. I thought it was a silence. It was big enough silence. I thought it was a kind of responsibility to continue the story with my cousin, because there has been a lot of child who died of AIDS. There has been a lot of child who are still living because of the medicine, and it's important for those child to be represented. Because I know a few young HIV living people, and it's still difficult for them to explain, because everyone asks, how can you be alive? How is it possible for you to live? Are you still HIV positive? There is a lot of question, and that's one of the reasons there is a scientific dimension in my book, because I didn't want to only make people cry. It's really easy with the death of the child to make people cry, and I just wanted to relate what was AIDS before medicine.
Yeah.
And I think it's a kind of thanks, of homage to the first doctors, the first scientists who worked on a strange disease from five homosexual in Los Angeles. And I wanted to thank them. And I'm living in Nice. I don't know anyone in the medicine world. So I can take my phone to say thanks to Willy Rosenbaum and Jacques Lebovitch and the others. So I start to write, because I saw there was a lot of street with a lot of name of France, and I wanted them to be known, like people we are on the name of the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was important, because some of them are just died. Jacques Lebovitch is dead on March 2020, and Luc Montagnier died a few months ago.
And Françoise Barré, Senussi's still alive.
Still alive, yeah, of course. But
do you know if she saw your book? If she has read
I don't know, because it's a big question. I never met them, but I saw people, they talk with them about the book, and they say, oh yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know. I think it's the same case in my family. My family can't read the book like anyone, because it must be strange to read a book when you are one of the characters. The one thing they told me is they were a surprise, because it was really in touch with reality, and that's a kind of satisfaction, because I wanted to. This part of the novel to be useful, and I've tried to do my best in this part.
Well, and I really think that stands out, and you've mentioned before your family. I think they play a big role in the book. I think one of the things that really touches me is that you often still to this day see that HIV is very much related to stigma, people not understanding, shame, not wanting to share it. And I think many stories have been told where people are cast away by their families. I think what really touched me in your book is that your family is very loving. They take care. They take care of your niece, your uncle. They want to help. There's this great scene in the book where your niece, she's still in school, and then the rumors start going around that she might have AIDS, and your grandmother takes the phone book and starts calling everybody in the village, telling them to come to the house and to apologize to your niece, who's 8 or 9 by that age. So it's not that they're not loving or committed, and at the same time you cannot seem to be speaking about it, or the word AIDS cannot be mentioned. So I'm just wondering perhaps two things, like how was that for you growing up in that environment, but perhaps first of all, how did they respond to this book? Because you mentioned now it's been translated in 16 languages. It's going all around the world. Here's this story where your family, they have been quiet about it all these years, and now it's out there. Was that, were they supportive of your writing process? Have they been supportive of the book? How has that been?
Okay. At first, yes, I wanted to show them how courageous they have been, because I thought that during the tragedy, they never saw themselves act, because there was an emergency, and when there is a fire in a room, you're not looking at the fire and saying, "Oh, it's really interesting. How are we going to react?" You just act to stop the fire. And in front of AIDS, they never stopped and questioned themselves. They just act. They had a brother to take care of. They had a young girl to take care of. And when everybody died, they just stopped thinking about it. They never came around a table and talked. And it's a big question for me. And I wanted to write a book to tell them their own story, because I was a child and I was a bit protected. Because I was a child, so they never told me completely the real truth. They was always talking about a disease, never talk about AIDS. They were always saying to me that my cousin was going to survive. We were before 1996, so there was no reason, but there was praying. And then I think it was a kind of responsibility to me from the next generation to tell the story to the previous generation, because our generation thinks that talking is freedom, but for the people from the other generation, it's not true. Talking is always a problem. So I wanted to show the gap between the generation. I wanted to show them times have changed. But in the village, I'm not sure times have changed, because there is still, it's a village with a little 100 people, and there is still no homosexual.
And they must all have read the book, probably.
Yeah. And in this village, there is no homosexual, there is old boys. Everybody knows they are homosexual, but they are not allowed to be homosexual in front of anyone. So I thought the homosexual dimension of the pandemic in France, in the media, etc., was one of reasons of the silence. Because if my uncle was HIV positive, he can be homosexual, and even if my grandmother say he was not, she would have to say he was taking drugs, and it was the same problem. So I think it's the book of a child who grew up and would just try to make things have sense, and I think it's a kind of plot to put on order. And
were they happy with your book?
Yeah, it's really complicated for them, because they are it's complicated because they are really happy for me, because I wrote a book, and it's great. It's a great honor for them, but they would prefer I wrote a book about the neighbors. So they are completely. It's really paradoxical for them, and it's we never talked about that story, and because of the book now we are able to talk. We are not angry. Some of them are really angry, and they still think they they still think it's a bad idea to have wrote this book. But it's the first time we can talk about this story. And it's a novel. And they discover that that everything is not true. And they discover that they didn't tell the whole truth to the child. And they realize the child made a novel with the part of truth they have told during the past.
Yeah, and reading your book, I was also thinking it's such a great... At the end of the book ends with you calling, and it's a novel, of course, so I'm just assuming that this has happened, or at least you're describing that, which really touched me, is that you, or the person representing you in the book, at the end calls a friend of your uncle, and that she gives such a different perspective of his life, and all of a sudden he comes alive because he was this young, vibrant person and not that sick person with all the shame around it. And that gave a whole new perspective on your uncle. How was writing this novel for you in that sense, in discovering your family?
Yes, it was important for me to not to repeat the novel my father told me. I have to write my own novel. So once I saw my mother and I said, but are all Desiree's friends dead? And she said, no, there is still a girl who is still alive. She must be 65 years old. And my mother had, I don't know, how can she be alive? And I realized that my mother didn't know anything about the medicine. She was still stuck before 1996. And then I start to, she gave me her name. And I search her on Facebook, and I realized that we were in the 1980s. So it was important to call her by the phone. Mm-hmm. I meet her. It was really, really important because it was the first time anyone talk about Desiree without anger, without moral judgment. And it was a kind of deflagration. It was really strong to me. And then I said, it must be the end of the book because it's kind of a part of light. We came in. It's the best moment to close the book because... what is really interesting with people who take drugs, you can never really understand why someone takes drugs. It's a kind of mystery. And there is probably a thousand reasons different. So I thought she was giving a lot of elements without saying which one was the one the most important. So I tried to close the book with that. But I have a question for you because now I realized something because we used to talk about treatment as prevention, and I propose novel as prevention because I thought the prevention is always difficult because of the money, because of a lot of things, different countries. And I realize maybe the most of the things I know about AIDS came from movies and novel. And I thought it was my part of the action you are working on.
No, definitely. And I think it's if you look at where we are now, because your book is set in the 80s and early 90s, I think there's been so much breakthrough in the fight against HIV. You're talking about the scientific part. Like I told you myself, I'm living with HIV. For me, that means one pill a day. My life expectancy is the same as everybody else. We also know now that because that treatment works so well and the virus is so suppressed, I cannot transmit it to anybody else anymore. So that doesn't mean like my partner is not HIV positive. We don't have to have a condom, use a condom to have sex. And that's been hugely liberating for people living with HIV, but also a great breakthrough in prevention, because prevention is no longer just a condom. It's also putting people on treatment. Another great breakthrough has been PrEP, the HIV prevention pill. So it's a pill you take if you don't have HIV, then you cannot acquire HIV anymore. So in the scientific part, that's also such a big part of your book, there have been huge breakthroughs. We now also have injectable treatments. So it's just a shot once every 2 months instead of a daily pill. For people, for example, in low- and middle-income countries where your pharmacy is very far away, or where you live in a house where you live with a lot of other people that you don't want to know that you take a daily medication, this injection is a huge breakthrough. And at the same time, we still see in more than 40 countries around the world the number of new HIV infections rising. Last year, more than 600,000 people died of AIDS. And if you then look at all these medical breakthroughs and at the same time at those numbers, and the question's really, the answer's really clear. It's countries where human rights are not respected. We were speaking about Russia, for example. You cannot give any prevention messages in Russia to gay men, for example, because that's propaganda. But it's also in many African countries, Western Africa, Eastern Africa, where, for example, giving sexual health education to young women is not allowed. As a young woman, you don't have any autonomy about your body, so let alone that you can negotiate to have a condom to you when you're having sex. So HIV is still the number one cause of death among young women worldwide. And these are a lot of things that people don't know, because I think in the countries where we live, in France and the Netherlands, the image is that HIV is solved, we're done. And at the same time, I think the hardest part has still to come, that how do we reach everyone that's vulnerable for HIV? How do we reach everybody that needs that treatment? But these are now the most marginalized people, like your uncle. It's now 70% worldwide, 70% of new HIV infections are among gay men, trans people, people using drugs, and sex workers. And those are also the groups that are most marginalized. So I think on the one hand, we can be very proud, and there's been great breakthroughs by these activists and by the scientific community. And at the same time, we're not done yet. And that's why at AIDSfonds, we work in the Netherlands and internationally. We partner with a lot of organizations internationally to do this last mile, to make sure that we reach everyone that needs to be reached. And I think you're right. Part of that is telling stories to make people aware of where we're coming from, what the breakthroughs have been. But also to make it human. I think, for example, people who use drugs, it's a very hard group for us to, for example, to fundraise for, because people don't relate to that. And I think in your book, by telling the story of your uncle and the human side of that, I think that's very important for our collective effort in ending AIDS. And I think this is an important part of it. This book is an important part of it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Can I ask you, in your book starts with Amsterdam. We are here in Amsterdam, and I think it's your, you ask your father, what's the furthest you've been? And he says Amsterdam, and then he doesn't want to talk about it. And later on, we learn that your uncle went to Amsterdam, and this is where he probably started his drug use. And I understood that this now is your first time in Amsterdam. How is that?
It's a big emotion for me, but I think it's the power of the book. Only a book could bring someone of my family back in Amsterdam. And I think it's a wonderful reason to come on the way of my father, the way of my uncle. They never told me anything about Amsterdam. The only thing I have is they met a girl in Amsterdam, yeah. And I found her back on Facebook, and she gave me a few photographs, and my father and my uncle seems to be so happy. They are partying in a little flat with a lot of wine bottle. And my father always presents his trip to Amsterdam like something he didn't want to do. And I thought it was a big thing for him. It's his only trip out of France for all his life. And I think he didn't tell me everything, but I think there was some great things in this trip. So it's a big emotion for me to be here with you, particularly.
Yeah, so I hope you get to see something of Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I think we're getting to sort of a close of the conversation. Just wondering if you, because I think you really explain where you're coming from. You're telling a story about your family. What have you learned about HIV and AIDS? I think in the book you mentioned as a child, like, you know that HIV or AIDS is related to homosexuals and to drug users. But now with all your research, what's your image?
I thought I was closing a door. I thought I was closing the question of HIV and my family with all those bad memories. And I opened a door. And now I can talk about HIV. I can interest people about HIV. I'm often going to school to talk about the PrEP. U is equal to U. I'm talking about condoms, everything. And I saw how much I can act myself. I can be a part of the prevention. And I think it's a wonderful conclusion. I do what I can, but each time the French associations ask me anything and I came to them, I realize how it's my place. I'm part of the game. And I think it's something I have to give to the memory of my uncle. That's my place, and it's important for me to do this. And it's a great, great satisfaction to do this. And it's because of the book. And it's the power of literacy.
Yeah, so thank you for that. And I think
so much.
You're part of that movement. I think what always has been the power of I think the response to HIV, that it's never been just the scientists or just the activists. Or just the writers. It's been a combination of all these people, men, women, trans people, coming together, fighting for their rights, and we're still doing that up to a certain degree. But we have to tell those stories, and I think I really enjoyed your book. I think you add a very important story to the many stories that have been told, but like we shared, I think there's so many more stories to be told. So thank you very much, Anthony, for writing
this
down.
Thank you so much.